The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay, so welcome back for our fourth class, Introduction to Mindfulness Meditation. And today the topic will be mindfulness of thinking. But I thought before we go into that, anybody like to ask any questions about their meditation so far or about the practice instructions I've given so far?
Yes, hello. I have noticed before when I have ramped up my meditative disciplines of various kinds that sometimes I'll go through maybe some meditations where by the end of the meditation I'll be so full up of, I don't know, emotion or something, almost to so much that I can't necessarily discern exactly what it is, but I feel very bound inside. It's almost hard to connect with the world again.
Okay. So are the emotions that you're filled up with, are they, so you're not sure what they are, but are they in the pleasant category or the unpleasant category?
No, not in the pleasant category. Yeah. I mean, I've had emotions in the pleasant category, but these were not. And it's almost like there's so much that all of my energy is consumed with containing.
Containing.
And so it becomes difficult to move back out.
What does containing mean?
Well, I've been trying to explore what that means, whether I'm actually not accepting them or I'm not quite sure what I'm doing with them, but it means I'm not, I think at some level I'm not quite sure what I need to do with that energy.
Uh-huh. The, I think what we do with mindfulness is that the first thing we do in mindfulness meditation is we don't do anything with it, even if it's something that's difficult or challenging like this, but the first thing we do is we bring mindfulness to it. And there's two things we're trying to do with mindfulness. One is we're trying to see more clearly what's really going on just by being present and looking at it, getting to know it. The other is that it's a more radical thing, which is that in the clear mindfulness of it, it's being so clearly mindful, cognizant, aware that it's happening, that you're not caught by it. That the knowing mind, that mind, it's kind of like you're the observer that can watch it and rather than being mired in it. So, and that's a very useful thing because then the issue you're having might not feel as such a big problem. It tends to be a bigger problem if you're mired in it or identified with it or caught up in it. So when people meditate, all kinds of aspects of their inner life will bubble up. And it's kind of like meditation is like making space for what's inside to show itself. And sometimes what shows itself is quite beautiful and pleasant and wonderful. And the freer a person is, the more that's the case. Sometimes what shows itself is difficult things. There can be emotions that have been held at bay for a long time, memories that are difficult, beliefs that would rather not look at, or whatever. So these things start showing up. And they're not a mistake that they show up. It's part of the function of mindfulness is to practice, is to bring these things to the surface so we can resolve them, settle them, dissolve them. So in Buddhist terminology, we call this process purification. And so it's not uncommon for some people who sit down to meditate. Sometimes people who are brand new, they have this huge backlog. They've been going busy and distracted for a long time that they sit down and relax a little bit and something dramatic comes up for them. And so I don't know how dramatic it is, but if you're patient and take your time, then I think you'll find your way through. If you need to solve it quickly, then probably you're in the wrong place. It's probably wiser to just say, I'm going to be patient and be with this. If you have a regular pattern where you go through that and you feel kind of caught up in the world in such a way that you can't quite engage or connect, then plan ahead. So meditate only when you have a transition time to go take a shower, go for a run, talk to a friend, do something that kind of helps you get more integrated again.
I'm having issues with, when I first start out meditating, it's great and I'm able to focus on my breath and everything like that, but I find like the last 5 minutes, I'm just like, oh, when is this going to end, you know? And are there any pointers to help me? Because now I looked at the sheet, and this week we're supposed to be doing 30 minutes, and I'm just like, oh my God, it's so hard.
Yeah, well, when the class is over, 6 weeks are over, then you can cut back again. Well, mindfulness meditation has different functions. Mm-hmm. And it depends. In the bigger picture, you have to decide which function you find most attractive or meaningful for you. So one of the functions is to relax, to de-stress. And so in that situation, as soon as you start getting impatient, you might want to stop meditating because, you know, you've relaxed, you've chilled out a little bit, and rather than kind of getting wound up again, just end your sitting. That's one function. Another function is to really meet yourself in a deep way and get to know yourself well and to work through some of these things. And what will happen sooner or later is that some of the common tendencies of how we relate and react to the world around us become evident in meditation. And there's a great opportunity to learn a new way of being with new relationship, to work through it in a deeper way in the meditation than it is in daily life. So you might think this is exciting. You know, you can look forward to those last 5 minutes because that's where the meditation really begins. The beginning was just relaxing, and the last 5 minutes is where you meet yourself. And you get to meet your impatience, you get to meet your aversion, you get to meet a lot of different things. So you can get curious there and say, now, you know, here it comes. Let me try to understand better what's going on. Let me try to look and feel better. And so rather than being pushed around by your impatience, you would turn around and you'd feel what impatience is like in the body. Impatience here would be the emotion, like we talked about last week. And then you would recognize it, you'd allow it, and then you'd really feel it in your body. And where is impatience? Is it in your little toe? Maybe not my little toe. But it's really, you know, now that I feel it, it's really, you know, I feel my legs are about to bolt. Or I feel like I'm burst in my chest. Oh, bursting in my chest, what's that like? And then you get in there and feel it and allow it, make space for it. And then you might find that something very interesting and different happens to your impatience and your restlessness than if you kind of give in to it. If you're always giving into it, you're not going to learn something important through it. So you have to decide what you want to do. So one more, I saw a hand.
So I actually missed last class, but I went back and listened to your previous emotion class on emotions, and you talk about the second arrow there, and it's so unbelievably practical on a day-to-day basis. I catch myself, oh, I forgot my file, you know, the next thing I'd usually say is, I'm so unorganized, so I stop. Oh, there's my second arrow, stop. So that's been very helpful.
Beautiful.
My question to you is, it's easier when I'm sitting here with you, and so it seems like you pull me back from my thoughts when I get lost.
Right.
It's like walking with you. But when I'm at home, I don't even realize that I'm lost in my thoughts. And then the bell rings, I'm like, oops, I'm supposed to have been meditating. So is there any way to, maybe have the bell ring every 5 minutes or something?
You could do that. You could have a little timer that goes off and just pulls you back. Or you could try to see if you can arouse a greater alertness, vigilance, to kind of notice when you're drifting off. You know, ultimately, that's what you want to do, is you want to have a heightened attentiveness where you can track this yourself, you notice this yourself. It really helps to have a strong sense of being in your body. So when you sit down to meditate, it's really good to take some time to feel your body, be connected to your body, and feeling the breathing in the torso, where you feel your body, the body then becomes a reference point where it can be easier to notice when you wander away, because if you wander away, you're no longer in your body. So it's kind of your body helps you. But you're welcome. You can do a little timer if you want for a while and see if that helps and settle down. It's interesting. Some people find that opening their eyes helps. Some people will think more when their eyes are closed than if their eyes are open. Some people will think more when their eyes are open than when their eyes are closed. So you might experiment with just opening your eyes just a teeny, teeny bit, and seeing if then you're less likely to wander off in thought. And also the instructions today on thought thinking might be interesting as well.
Yeah, I'm ready for it.
So one more, and then I'll start here. So if you can pass it back, straight back.
Yeah, I just also wanted to talk about the second arrow thing. For me, it was hugely practically useful. I mean, I started, first noticing that I was sticking myself with second arrows, and then catching myself before, you know, I stuck myself with the second arrow. And, you know, I had mentioned, I think, last time that I have a tendency to want to snip my emotions off to, you know, live in emotional neutral. But I think that that was kind of refuge from the second arrow as I began to, you know, catch myself sticking myself with the second arrow and sometimes third arrow. When I was able to not stick myself again and again, I didn't have the need to snip off the emotions because I didn't have the plethora of negative emotions that I'm used to living with.
That's fantastic.
And so I just want to say it was extremely practically useful for me. And my question is, what do I do with it now?
With it? With what, the arrows?
Yeah, I mean, with that second arrow that was going to, you know, I've caught it, but it...
Oh, I see. So it's still kind of there.
Yeah.
So, but just kind of, you're not letting it kind of hit or you know, kind of stop it midair, kind of.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a beautiful question. I love it. So if you have a sense that, you know, you managed to stop it, but it's still there, the tendency's there, the kind of momentum's a little bit there. We say in Buddhism sometimes you can turn it into a flower. The arrows to flowers, but rather than swords to plowshares. But you turn into flowers. But what you do is you would turn towards the arrow and be present for it. It's kind of like you have an angry kid comes in here. It's really angry. Say it's a 3 or 4 year old. It's really angry, and you don't throw the kid out. You can't be angry. Get out here, or here I'll fix you. you know what you do is probably is you would go over to the kid and say, "It's okay. I'm here with you," and you just kind of offer your presence for a while. And slowly the kid relaxes. So in the same way, you would turn around to that tendency to hit, shoot the arrow, or to the arrow that's hanging there, and kindly, patiently, be present and feel what that's like. And so as you feel it and make space for it, allow it, feel that in your body, then slowly you might find that it begins to shift and change. It might turn into a flower. It might move into something nice, or you might begin understanding more deeply what's going on. And it might, for example, you might discover, for example, that it's not really a second arrow. It turns out it's a third. But the second arrow is so quick and so subtle that you know, it's so kind of behind that you haven't seen it. And so if you turn towards it, you can see more deeply what's going on.
Okay.
So you might do that. Turn towards it and say hi.
Excellent. Thank you.
And it's my impression many, many times that when we turn towards these difficult things that we do, the difficult emotions, difficult motivations, difficult things, that there's a way if we turn towards it mindfully and not add more arrows and just make space for it and feel it, sometimes you'll discover that behind it and behind it or below it is something really healthy that somehow has been misdirected. And if we just dismiss it offhand, like, forget that, I'm going to reject that, I'm not going to do that anymore, I'm going to be a good Buddhist and not be angry. Instead, you turn towards the anger and you'd feel the anger and just be with it. It might take a while. Wild means it might take weeks, but you turn, feel with it, be with it, and then at some point you might see that behind that anger, back behind the anger, is a desire to feel safe, for example. A desire to feel safe is a good thing. And just being angry is not the best way to be safe. But if you find that desire to be safe, then you can ask, well, is there a better way? So, but if you hadn't spent the time with the anger to get to know it and all that, you might not have found that the genesis of it is something that's healthy.
Okay, so then that's kind of leading back to the roots of the arrows almost.
Kind of, yes. Huh. Now, what we don't do in this tradition here is we don't go digging. for the roots. I'm talking about layers or what's behind it and all that. We don't go looking. Like, there must be something deeper here. That's extra. That's too much. Mm. What we do is we offer our kind, patient attention to what is obvious, and then we let whatever is there show itself. So if you have the second arrow, and I don't know why I keep focusing on anger, but you focus on the anger, you're just there with it, and you say, you show me what you have. My job is to make space and just be present for what's obvious. And as you're there and relax with it, then at some point it opens up a little bit, or you see that, look through the cracks of it, and something obvious shows itself to you that some people might say is underneath. Mm. So it's very important. Don't go digging. Mm. Don't go looking. Don't go trying to find something. Mindfulness, in order to be relaxed and really work well, it's best if you just... Your job is just to be present for what is. And not make it complicated. Hmm. Digging is complicated.
All right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that actually made it much clearer. Thank you.
Okay. So, why don't you give Smita the mic, and then I'll... So I'm glad that this story about the arrows was meaningful for some of you, because I'm going to give you a couple of other little analogies or similes. And they have to do with grasping. So when I teach children here, sometimes I'll hold this bell up like this. I'll grasp the bell. And then I'll hit the bell like this. When I grasp, that's what happens. But if I hold it lightly and with an open palm, it makes a beautiful sound. So when we grasp things, we kind of kill something, or we prevent something from happening. Another grasping story is a story that's told in India. It's an ancient story, I think, idea. It goes back to the Buddha. I don't know if it goes back to the Buddha, but it's an ancient story. And it's how you catch a monkey. And what you do, apparently, is you take a coconut, somehow you make a slot in the coconut that's kind of a narrow, you know, horizontal slot. And then you scoop out the inside, I guess. And then you put a sweet, a candy, inside. And then you tie the coconut to a tree. And so a monkey comes along. Monkeys like sweets. So the monkey smells or sees the candy in there. So the monkey can get its hand into the coconut if the hand is flat. But when the hand grasps the coconut, then the candy, then it bunches up. And so then when a rounded fist holding it, as long as it's holding the candy, it tries to pull out. Because the slot is narrow, it can't get out. And the monkey is so greedy for the candy, it's not going to give it up. And so the hunter can just come along and pick up the monkey. So, two stories about grasping. And not that any of you grasp that way, but this is a very important part extremely important part of Buddhism, the idea of understanding grasping and the value of not grasping. And in some ways, some people say that's really the heart of Buddhism. If you want to get to the heart of what Buddhism is all about, it's that simple movement, understanding grasping and letting go. And so the complicated philosophies of Buddhism have its genesis, its origin in that simple thing. So I tell the story now, and because I'm going to lead you through a kind of guided meditation on thoughts, on thinking. And one of the primary things people cling to is their thinking, and their ideas, their concepts. Some people think more in images. Some people think more in words, but they said that actually that's maybe almost all we ever cling to. If we're on the edge of Half Dome and holding on to the railing, then we're holding on to a thing that's useful. But generally, it's ideas of things. So if you're clinging to, for example, if you're clinging to a relationship, you're probably not holding on to the person for dear life physically, but you're holding on to your ideas, projections, assumptions, beliefs, feelings connected to that person. And a lot of that's based on ideas, on thoughts. And it's and so a famous story, a teaching in our tradition, goes back to a teacher in India, who some American was coming and talking about her problems with her mother. And the teacher said, the thoughts of your mother are not your mother. And that helped this woman so much. The thoughts of your mother are not your mother. Your thoughts of your partner are not your partner. And so your thoughts may or may not be accurate, but they're actually, even they're accurate, they're not the same thing. But when we grasp and cling to something, it tends to be the thoughts. And that's one of the reasons why it can be so powerful to get pulled away into the world of thinking when we meditate, because of the tremendous gravitational pull of clinging. We latch on. There's, thoughts can be so important. And the ideas are so important. For dear life, we're holding on to the thoughts. And so one of the things we're learning to do to meditate is to relax the grip, the clinging, the grasping that we have on thinking. Now, you might think that, well, what's left? Some people are afraid to let go of grasping, let go of thinking, because that's how they've understood their life and how they oriented themselves to their life the whole life. It's all mediated through thoughts and imagery and stuff like that. So the only thing I'll say now about that is that if you let go of your thinking, then your thinking process can be more like this than like this. So your thinking actually functions much better when there's no grasping connected to it. So in meditation, mindfulness meditation, thinking is not... thinking is often one of the big challenges for people to do mindfulness, because thinking is what makes it difficult to be in the present moment. So in a sense, a lot of meditation is working with thinking, getting wise about it. But it's easy to think you're supposed to be antagonistic to it. Like thinking is your enemy and you're not supposed to think and those pesky thoughts. But what we do in this tradition is when thinking becomes predominant, just like if the body sensations or emotions become predominant, then we take the meditative attention and turn towards the thinking itself. And thinking becomes the object of the meditation. Not to think better, but to step back and become free of the thinking. But we do that by turning towards it, not by fighting it. So I'll explain more. If this is not clear, it'll become clearer in the next hour or so. But that's what I want to do as an introduction for this next meditation. And what I'm going to do now in this meditation, we're going to sit for a little while, just get a little bit calm perhaps, or settle down. And then I'm going to do a guide you through a guided exploration. It's not the same thing as the meditation that we normally do, but it's an exploration of the world of thinking that hopefully will give you more familiar to this world of thinking than you've ever been before. And so then when I give the instructions afterwards, you'll have a better sense of how it can be done and what we're approaching. So take a comfortable, alert posture. If you're restless, the comfortable should be emphasized. If you're tired, then the alert part of the posture should be emphasized. Sit up a little bit straighter. And then gently close your eyes. And to begin with, we want to just to settle in and to arrive here. It can be helpful to take a few long, slow, deep breaths. And as you breathe in deeply, to feel your torso expand and stretch, your shoulders lift. And as you exhale deeply, to relax and let go. Let go of the thoughts and concerns of the day in favor of being here, settling into your body. And then letting your attention return to normal. your attention to your breathing return to normal. And take a few moments to feel your body, how it is now, to get familiar with your body. Hopefully being just okay with however it is. Just to feel it. Whether it's comfortable or uncomfortable, just feel. And as you exhale, perhaps you can soften your forehead and your eyes. Perhaps allowing your eyes to settle back into their sockets. And then see if you can soften your area of your cheeks, your jaws. Some people find it helpful to drop the mouth open and then float the teeth back together gently. And then as you exhale, perhaps you can soften around the shoulders. Around the shoulder blades. And then perhaps you can soften the belly. Relaxing the belly. Some people find it helpful also to relax the legs, the thighs, and to let your weight and gravity work together to give you a solid connection to your chair or your cushion as a reminder to be here. This time, at this place. And then within the body, as part of your body, become aware of how your body experiences breathing. And begin tuning yourself into the experience of breathing within the body. And every time that you exhale, see if you can let go of any thoughts that have crept in. And we'll take the next few minutes to sit quietly, being with the breathing. Coming back to your breathing. Letting go of the thoughts and concerns the best you can. Or if you can't quite let go of them, let your thoughts be in the background. In the foreground, stay with your breathing. Settling in to your breathing. And then as you try to focus on your breathing, notice something about the frequency with which you start thinking. The frequency in which you get pulled off into the world of thoughts and lose touch with the breath. Is it half a breath, quarter breath you get before you wander off? Is it two or three breaths approximately or longer? Just notice, nothing is wrong, no problems here, but just notice how quickly or slowly you might get pulled into the world of thinking. And when you notice that, then come back to your breath. And then now the instruction is to completely let go of paying attention to your breathing. And now turn your attention completely and fully to notice your thinking. Rather than letting go of thinking or worrying about staying with the breath, turn your attention fully and look thinking right in the eye. Notice yourself thinking. If your thinking goes away, then you can go to your breathing until thinking begins again. And then don't try to stop thinking, just look at it occurring. As if you're almost like you're listening to someone else have a conversation or someone else paint images. Just look at the thinking as it occurs, clearly knowing it's happening. You can think whatever you want. And then when you can be aware of your thinking, notice if you're thinking in words, notice the quality or the tone of the inner voice that does your thinking. What's the quality of that inner voice? Is it soft and gentle, slow? Is it fast, harsh, loud? Is it loving, kind, or is it judgmental, critical? Is it timid, or is it confident and assertive? Like you would listen to someone else's talking, and you can hear not only what they're saying, but you can hear something about the tone of their voice. So what's the tone of that inner voice for you as you think? Or if it's mostly in images that you have, how sharp are the images? How weak? What's the quality of those images? What's the tone that's being expressed? The mood that comes through those images? Is there a lot of energy for your thinking, or is it hardly any energy for thinking at all? What's the energetic level of thinking for you? How strongly are you pulled into the world of thoughts? How much interest do you have, or how much are you pulled into it, or how much do you react to it? What's your relationship to all this thinking? You can think anything you want, allow yourself to think, but look at the thinking. Is there any emotion that's somehow connected to your thinking? And if there is, take a few moments just to be mindful of that emotion. Feel it in your body, recognize that it's there. And as you are aware of thinking, if you think in words, do you have any sense that there's a like a place where the loudspeaker or the inner voice is doing its speaking? Where's the speaker for that voice? Or if you think in images, do you have any sense of a place where the images are projected? A location? And then maybe in that location, or maybe somewhere else, do you feel any, is there anything physical that you experience connected to your thinking? Any tension or pressure? Tightness? Some people feel tightness in their eyes and they think, or pressure in their skull inside the brain. Some people carry tension in their jaws. Is there any physical element that comes into play as you think that's related to it? Or is it just a lot of energy that you feel someplace in your body that seems somehow connected to thinking? And then finally, if you do feel any tension or pressure, tightness connected to your thinking, physical tightness, pressure, on the next few exhales, see if you can relax that pressure, tightness, tension. Relax the thinking muscle. And then to end this sitting, you can take a few long, slow, deep breaths. Connect back to your breathing and to your body. And then when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So, two things I was trying to do with you with that guided meditation, guided kind of exploration of thinking. One was to help you become more familiar with the terrain of thinking, what goes on when you think. And the second is, connected to that, is that there's not just the content of what you think about, but there's also the process of thinking itself. the event of thinking. And so, you know, if you just had a wonderful nap and a relaxed day and sit down to meditate, everything's comfortable and nice for you, you might find that your thoughts are kind of very light, soft. But if you came here just after robbing the bank and the police are in hot pursuit and you hear the sirens, chances are that your thinking is going to be racing and quite loud. There can be a range in intensity with which we think. Thoughts can happen slowly, but you get a sense that there's actually sometimes gaps between the thoughts. And thoughts can happen rapid fire, where there's no gap at all, just, you know, seemingly many thoughts at once even sometimes. And so whatever the content is, that's separate from the fact that it's going slow or going fast. So there's that difference between the content, and many people focus on the content. And it's the content that people tend to grasp onto or get preoccupied with, get interested in. And for the purposes of meditation, it's important to recognize that there's the process of thinking as well. Because in meditation, the content of your thoughts are not that important. Actually, we encourage you not to pay much attention there at all, with some rare exceptions. But we want to notice that the event of thinking itself. If we get involved in the content, interested in the content, what happens is we get pulled into the stories. And we do more storytelling, more thinking. But if you turn towards the thinking with attention and look at it as a process, as an event, almost like they're talking a foreign language, then you're attending to the thinking, you're present for it, but you're less likely then to get pulled into the world of those thoughts. And that's the difference. So I mean, it might be nice to hear from some of you what it was like for you to do that exploration of thinking.
Normally when I meditate, I have usually very positive experiences because I'm doing more sensory meditation. But with this one, this is actually the most stressful one I've ever had. And I think what happened is I found myself getting caught. But by observing my thinking, I began thinking about my thinking. And I think that makes for a very stressful combination. And I couldn't figure out how to get out of that mode I was in. And I felt like a total like brain freeze over. Like I couldn't even deal. And it just felt like I was definitely going in the wrong direction. And I think what was difficult was that it felt like it was hard to see something outside of just that process of thinking, which seems so second nature.
So it seems so what?
So second nature. I'm having a hard time explaining it, but it almost felt like the being is trying to understand itself. It just felt that the tools I was using were the same ones I was trying to analyze.
Oh, I see. Well, that's interesting. So one of the confusions that people can make with the mindfulness is think that mindfulness is thinkfulness.
Right.
And so the idea is you only know something if you kind of have some kind of thoughts to tell yourself about it. And mindfulness is not thinking about things. It's more observing or bringing presence to something. There might be some very rudimentary thoughts operating, but they're not the kind of discursive thinking or commentary thinking that most people use. And some people identify so strongly with their thinking that their thinking is who they are. And the idea of not thinking or stepping back and away from thinking is actually sometimes very frightening, because who are they if they're not their thoughts? So I can imagine it's going to be difficult to do it. So it's valuable to see that that's the case. This is good to see all this. And then and that's part of the territory that you have to get familiar with, so that thinking can become part of the mindfulness, not something you have to ignore.
I think with the different methods, I'm able to very much get away from my thoughts, like through the sensory methods.
Yeah.
But with this one, is there like some sort of maybe?
Yeah. So it's possible. So there's a lot of things you can do to get away from thinking and not think and get calm. But then part of who you are, it doesn't get included in the field of mindfulness. And what we want to do in this practice here is we want to learn how to bring a wise attention to all aspects of our life. And thinking is an important part of life, And we don't want to always just be ignoring it to get calm and concentrated, because then you're bifurcating your life, and you're going to go to meditation for some kind of relief or refuge, but you haven't learned anything about actually how thinking works and your relationship to it. And so when you come out of meditation, you'll probably go back into the world of thinking and not be any wiser. You might be calmer for a little while. But if you learn how to turn attention towards thinking, then you start becoming wise. You understand how it works. You understand the magic trick. They say, we say sometimes that, maybe I said this already to you, that if you can watch a magic trick forever and be fascinated until the magician tells you how it's done. And then you don't want to watch it more than one more time. So if as long as the magic of the thinking world is not seen, it's easy to get enamored with it. But once you see the magic, then you can have a much wiser relationship. You see how the trick is done. So
that makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
So it's over here. Could you pass it over to the stage there, please?
So I had the weirdest experience ever, because usually when I meditate, I'm pretty calm, but today I was a little bit more stressed, so I had all these thoughts coming through my head, and I tried to concentrate on the breathing. And then when you said, concentrate on the thinking, I was like, oh my God, I don't want to look at my thoughts like this intimately, and so I couldn't think at all about anything. And I had to breathe and just look at my breathing. And yeah, so I just wanted to ask you, like, why do you think this happened? Could it be that maybe some thoughts are too strong and you don't want to actually face them?
So it's not, how many of you found that when you turn your attention to finally look at thoughts, you're allowed, you give them permission to think, not let go of it and come back to your breath, and just like now you can think to your heart's content and look at it directly. How many of you found that the thoughts kind of were shy? See? So there's a few things. I mean, you said that you didn't want to look at it, so there could be a kind of denial, a turning away, a shutting down that can happen. More often, what happens with thinking, I like to distinguish thinking and thoughting. And thoughting is what the mind does. Thinking is when we get involved with a thought, a chain of associated thinking. We get involved, and thinking requires our involvement. Thoughting, a thought can float up, and it just, you know, just floats up, it's there. But if we get involved with a thought, that takes our involvement. And there's many ways in which we get involved. But when you can observe, when you step back and look at it clearly, then you're not exactly involved in it anymore. And so your energy is going into paying attention, energy is not going into fueling the thinking. And so many people find that thinking then just kind of fades away because it's not being fed. We're no longer involved. And thoughts will vanish very quickly if you're not involved in them. So some people find that's the reason they do it. It vanishes quickly. So someone else, what happened? So here.
One of the things I noticed, I came in very stressed and couldn't find a good position. I spent almost all the meditations just trying to find a comfortable posture, because everything is aching. And then we were doing this meditation, and I was allowed to think about the things that had been bothering me, and finally, I reached a point where I've got a ton of chatter going on, and I was able to observe the chatter and where it was all going. And then I finally did a modification of what you're saying. Basically, my thoughts of my boss are not my boss, because that was where the problem was. And as soon as I said that to myself, it was like I had given myself permission, and I felt so much of the pain in my body dissipate. You know, and that was, you know, just a minute or two before the end of the meditation. I was like, dang.
Beautiful.
I'm in a good spot. So, and now it's over.
Great. So I said that, you know, one of the primary things people cling to is their thinking. But clinging is not just a pure mental event, you know, disembodied mental event to cling to something. Clinging often get expressed then in our body. And so there can be a lot of tension that people hold in their body that can build up and cause a lot of physical problems. So maybe that was something like for you. So in terms of other things, you know, some of the different aspects of the thinking, like the tone of the voice, the emotions connected to it. Did anybody notice anything interesting or anything you'd like to mention?
I would just have kind of random little snippets of things pop up. I thought of them as maybe hearing a little piece from a TV scene, and then it would kind of disappear. So I never really figured out what they were other than they weren't nothing.
So that's more what you described is more the content. But they were
but
kind
I
of
couldn't they, tell you were they, what it was.
Were they very light? Were they heavy and strong, coming on strong?
No, because I had no... It would sort of appear, and then I wouldn't even be able to figure out exactly what
because it disappeared even before you almost noticed it.
Yeah, I noticed that there was something. I use that analogy as something from a TV show or
I see.
Some thought that persists for a second or two.
So this is very, very useful. To see that is very useful. So for tonight, your thoughts didn't have a lot of power. They were kind of just, they weren't so much thinking, it was just thoughting. And there wasn't much, you weren't attracted to them that strongly. You weren't holding on to them. They just came and disappeared. And that's a nice thing. So probably if we then turned back to be with the breathing, it would have been relatively easy for you to be the breath because you weren't going to be pulled in so much. The lady over here, before she got peaceful, if I said, be with your breath, be with your breath, be with your breath, she would have kind of felt, this is impossible. Because, you know, she was so concerned with her thoughts. So, thank you. Anybody else want to say something? Straight back with the mic.
My thoughts were varied. Dialogue, conversation, images. After we were done, it was like looking back at an otter playing in the water, and it would come up and be in one position and go away, and I would think about the breath, and then I'd find I was in a conversation, and I would, okay, what's this? And it would go away again, and then I would think about the breath and find myself, and it was as though we were playing.
Great. So for you, there wasn't any constant theme that was pushing at you.
Right.
The boss or something, but rather you could, in a sense, you'd float away and you'd go back to the breath and something whole different would happen. So the content changed quite a bit over time and varied. Probably you're pretty relaxed with it all, given that. So you're in a relaxed state and relaxed state, that's all, you know, thoughts can bubble up and change very quickly, the content there. So what I was trying to convey with this is how much there is to pay attention to with breathing, different from the content. And why that's important is that, so when we do mindfulness meditation, we try to stay with the breathing. There's an emphasis on the breath. Try to settle down, relax with the breathing, focus on the breathing. But when something else becomes compelling, so we feel a tug, it starts becoming a little bit challenging to be with the breath, then we let go of the breathing. And we turn that meditative attention calmly, deliberately, to pay attention to what's going on. So if your thoughts are really kind of pretty light, easy kind of thoughts, it's fine to just let go of them and come back to the breath. But if your thoughts are more persistent, well, you can't let go of them, they're churning away, you don't even know what letting go means because they're so powerful, or if you let go, then immediately you're back into them. It seems like you let go 10,000 times in a minute, but you just keep going back to it. Then you want to just not let go of them anymore. Don't try to do that. Don't go back to your breathing. But turn around and just look at thinking. Be completely aware and be mindful of the fact, here is a person that's thinking. And then try to have no second arrows. One second arrow is, I'm not supposed to be thinking. I'm meditating. I'm not supposed to be thinking. I'm a bad meditator. That's a second arrow. It hurts to do that. Or look at those thoughts. I'm having the world's worst thoughts. Or, yay, these are the best thoughts anybody's ever had, and I'm going to really get into it. We just try to see it, step back in a kind of neutral, friendly way, just see, oh, here is thinking. And then it can help sometimes to so we step back and not in it so strongly, to use a little mental note, a quiet little voice in the back of the mind maybe, that says, thinking, thinking, that acknowledges that we're thinking. Sometimes if you say the word thinking, it's kind of a little bit easier to step back from the content and not be so pulled into it. It's a fuller acknowledgement. This is what's going on now. Sometimes with a fuller acknowledgement like that and looking at it, that's enough to settle the issue, kind of, and then it's easier to come back to the breath and continue with the breathing. Sometimes thinking is much more persistent, much louder and stronger. And then you turn towards the thinking, and you clearly see yourself thinking, recognizes what's happening, and you might have to stay doing that for quite some time, because that's what's the main thing going on. And so then you can begin exploring the phenomena of thinking. Remembering we're not interested in the content, but more the event, the process. Like you're listening to someone speaking a foreign language, you don't know what they're saying, but you can tell a lot of what's going on from the tone of their voice, the energy they have, the speed, you know, a lot of things. So you can notice, for example, the emotion that's connected to your thinking. If thinking is really persistent, doesn't want to let go easily and just keeps coming back over and over and over again, chances are very good that it's being fueled by an emotion. And you can let go of your thoughts forever, but if the emotion is not addressed, the emotion is like a factory that's going to pump out more thoughts. So, for example, it's common for many people to spend a lot of time planning in meditation. And you can let go of your planning, and then next moment you're planning again. But if you look carefully at the planning, at the mind that does the planning, just turn towards it and notice that you're thinking, and then kind of feel your way, what's the emotion that's connected to it? More often than not, the emotion connected to planning is a fear or apprehension, some anxiety. Sometimes it's excitement and delight, but more often that it's some relative of fear. And then we would, if we recognize the fear, then we would turn and do mindfulness of the emotions and the fear that we talked about last week. Just be with the fear. And then if the fear is fully acknowledged, or if the fear kind of then fades away, then if you go back to your breathing, you're not going to be so easily pulled into the world of thinking again, or planning. Because the reason you're planning, it's kind of like the planning was really a cover or a symptom, and a symptom of something, and when you got to the root of it, the symptom no longer has to show itself. And the symptom was the root was the fear. So people who remember things a lot, like remembering a conversation, you know, sometimes it might be anger, sometimes there might be delight and pleasure connected to it. And we're so pulled into the world of the anger, so pulled by the pleasure and delight, that's what keeps the thinking going. And so you want to just quietly, calmly recognize, oh, this is the emotion connected to it. Sometimes if there's a lot of thinking going on, chances are you can find the physical aspect of the thinking. They say in Buddhism that all thinking, basically, most of the time, has a physical component part to it, aspect of it. So that, you know, as you can see it really well if you're really, you know, if you're really thinking really loudly and aggressively. Now you can see it in other people sometimes, you know. I see it in my children even, that, if they're really working hard in some problem, that, you know, they'll kind of, their faces little bunches up. You know, their eyes get tight and their eyebrows come together a little bit. And so the thinking has this physical aspect that's part of it. Someone says, I need to think about something. And, you know, they go like, you know, they put their hand on their chin and, you know, and there's some physical expression that comes part of it. So when you're sitting and not moving, though, you can feel the energy, the impulse, the movements of energy. And sometimes it's just pure energy, a lot of energy. Like if you're really restless with thoughts, it might feel like 10,000 bumblebees kind of flying around your head. And you can feel the energy kind of, and you do mindfulness of the body, Just feel that. Nothing wrong with it for the purposes of meditation. Just feel it. Sometimes there might be pressure or tension someplace. I sometimes feel it around my forehead and behind my forehead and inside my brain kind of feels like where there's a feeling of pressure or tightness or constriction that seems to be connected to a certain kind of preoccupation. And if I can find a physical tension or pressure, it might be possible to relax it intentionally, just soften. And that helps because sometimes that pressure or the tension has a feedback loop. That's what keeps the thinking happening. But if you can soften the body, then the thinking it doesn't get as much fuel and you're more easier to let go or doesn't get so much investment in it. One of the interesting things some people can notice, if you really feel the thinking mind, really feel what it is, the thinking mind, some people will discover that it's tired. It's weary. It's been thinking for a long time. And you maybe got a really good rest, you've slept really well. And so conventionally you're rested. But when you get really quiet and look, see that thinking mind, it's been churning and churning and churning, and it's weary and tired of all that. And so you can feel that tiredness and then just do mindfulness of the body, feel the weariness, the tiredness that's there. And perhaps put it to rest. Let it get a chance to rest and give a vacation. So I said that sometimes it's useful to note thinking. Sometimes if it's obvious what the thoughts are, you can note, remembering, or planning. And sometimes being a little more specific, it makes a fuller acknowledgement. Sometimes the more something's acknowledged, the easier it is to be disentangled from it or free from it. Is this making some sense? So for those of you who doesn't make sense, maybe you have a chance to ask a question first. Any questions about this so far?
Hi, good evening.
Hi.
So when I first think of thoughts, I think of irrational thoughts.
Irrational?
Irrational thoughts. Since that's in magazines, on TV and everything. And it seems like to heal that, the media talks about psychotherapy, cognitive behavioral. Uh-huh. But it sounds like that this is therapy as well.
It can be a form of therapy for people. It can be very healing and helpful. The cognitive therapy is very useful. There's a definitely important time to actually look at the content and what's going on there. Other kind of trainings in Buddhism. That's a very important part of Buddhism, is getting the thinking straight. But for the purpose of this for meditation, this is an area of life where we don't get involved in thinking, though thinking good is really helpful. Having rational, kind of reasonable thoughts about you and your meditation helps the process. Some people maybe need to develop certain kind of better cognitive skills, and it helps their meditation. But in essence, meditation is not about the cognitive part. But yes, it can be very healing, because sometimes it's the other aspects of thinking besides the content that's really driving it all. And so like the emotions, for example. And so sometimes cognitive therapy sometimes doesn't get back to the underlying emotions that need to be settled down or healed or something. And sometimes this kind of meditation doesn't really get to the cognitive part, the content part that needs to be addressed sometimes. So you have to kind of find your way. Did I respond to your question, or you want to ask again?
So for deep-rooted issues, you would probably do the cognitive first before you begin the insight meditation?
Not necessarily.
Or both at the same time?
I don't have any formula for knowing which to do first. But this practice here can go really deep. In fact, in the Buddhist world, this practice actually can go deeper than cognitive therapy can. It goes to the roots that are inside of us are much deeper than anything cognitive. So cognitive doesn't, it's kind of, I wouldn't say it's surface, but the cognitive dimension doesn't really belong to the depths of who we are. So even though it's an important area to pay attention to, at least in the Buddhist world, we believe it's this kind of practice that can get down to the real roots.
All right, thanks.
Over here.
One thing I noticed is that the thinking I have tends to be sort of going over interactions I've had during the day. sometimes it's just pure, obviously sort of out of anxiety, wondering if I handled that well. But sometimes it's also, maybe even more often, something I feel sort of good about. I'm just sort of taking delight in that. But then it kind of hooks me, and then I get to the point where, I didn't do that so well. And then I start getting spun up in that. And yeah. It's like I get hooked by a pleasurable part of
right.
thinking about what happened and ruminating, but it almost always takes me to a place I don't want to be that caused me to spin right. more.
Great. It's great that you see that. That's a great observation. So you have to be very careful, though. So what we with this meditation practice here, we try to, I don't like the word neutral, but we try just to be present in a mindful way for what is, without preferring the pleasant or the unpleasant. We don't want to get hooked by the pleasant. We don't get hooked by the unpleasant. We just want to see it for what it is. So you described being hooked by the pleasant, and you saw the consequences. Once you're in that world, watch out. So you're better off, actually, and there's greater pleasure to be found by not latching on to the pleasant part of thinking. And the greater pleasure of meditation may take a while to come to, but I offer you that carrot. So be careful that how pleasure or enjoyment is the hook that gets us into the world of thinking. And the idea is, for meditation, is you don't want to get hooked into the world at all. You want to stay balanced. Okay, so I want to say one more thing, I think, about thinking. A couple of things. First, to make it simple. If this kind of instructions on thinking, mindful thinking, is too complicated for you, it just seems like there's a lot to keep track of here and all this, it's fine just to forget all this that I said. And just come back to the breathing. Be very simple. And someday, some point, the thinking will stand out obviously enough to you, will be clear enough to you, that you'll turn your attention to it, and just it'll be obvious what to do because this instruction is kind of, enough of it lingers behind. You don't have to now take this up as an engineering project. You can basically forget the instructions until thinking comes knocking really loudly at the door. And then you say, okay, I'm going to look at this and be with it. So you can always go back to the breath and keep it simple. But thinking is really a big part of people's lives. And so it's really useful to get a handle on it. And if you get a handle on it in meditation, what you're more likely be able to find some freedom around thinking outside of meditation as well. Outside of meditation, life goes quickly, and we don't even see how we get hooked into our thoughts, our beliefs, our prejudices, our biases, our interpretations, and you know they operate so quickly. But as we learn to kind of step back and observe and be present and see what's going on, then there's a chance also in daily life that we have more choice around what we think. We don't get pulled into it as quickly. And perhaps we can let go of the ones not useful or not be enslaved by them. So a very interesting thing about thinking is that when you do meditation and you come back to your breath, maybe you can let go, you come back to your breath, and then at some point you get involved in thinking again. You come back to your breath, thinking, let go, come back. At some point you start noticing how repetitive your thoughts are. And how there's maybe the top three tunes. There's top three concerns that keep coming back over and over again. And it's amazing how repetitive you can be. If someone walked next to me and talked as much to me as I talk to myself and did it as repetitively as I do to myself, I'd wondered about the person's sanity. I would beg them, I would pay them to stop. I would be bored so quickly. What's amazing is when I have the thoughts in my head, I can have it 500 times, and it's just as interesting as the first time. That's the amazing thing. And so the question is, why do we stay so interested? And the interest, the attraction we have, the glue that keeps us in our thinking is one of the things you can be mindful of. And sometimes you can feel there's a strong glue, like the, you know, you're really latched on. And sometimes there's almost no glue, there's nothing at all. Just they float up by and nothing at all. But why we stay interested in these repetitive thoughts? And my proposal as an answer is that most thoughts are self-referential in nature. Most thoughts are self-referential in nature. Most thoughts are about you, that you have are about you. You're an important player in it. And so somehow or other your thoughts are reflecting back on some concern that you have for yourself, how you're seen by others, what you want, what you don't want, what you did, you know, all kinds of... You're a major player somehow or other. And it's the identification with thinking. It's the way that it relates to our sense of self and our self-understanding that's part of the hook that keeps us going. And so one of the things when we learn to step back and just observe thinking and watch it, we also begin freeing ourselves from the hook of identification, the hook of believing that's who we are, or that maybe in questioning the tremendous addiction that people have to self. And self is okay to have. You know, we're expected to have a self in some ways, but it's the addiction to it. And so if you're not clinging, if you cling to self, you get this. It's very brittle. It can break easily and explode easily. But if you're relaxed about self, you can have a self, but be very relaxed about it, then you become more like this. It's much nicer for the world. So the idea being that one of the things you can maybe be interesting to notice as you explore this world of thinking is the grasp and the pull into the world of selfing that goes on. And that's very stressful, generally. So as we learn to relax and settle into meditation, it helps if we're letting go of self-concern, self-preoccupation, or measuring ourselves and trying to solve our life through our thinking. Meditation, we don't solve our life through thinking, we solve our life through attention, by careful observation, by being careful presence, calm, relaxed presence for what is, as opposed to trying to solve things, you know, through the world of thinking. So I hope that makes some sense. And I am aware that this class sometimes can feel a little bit complicated with all these things to do with thinking, so maybe it's enough just to remember what you remember and keep it simple. Next week, we'll continue. Next week, it could get closer, more deep. If this class kind of goes inwards and thinking is kind of closer, more intimate to who we are, next week we're going to talk to something that's even more intimate. Sometimes in Buddhism it's called the heart, mindfulness of the heart or mindfulness of the mind in a deeper way. And I think next week I hope that we can do two meditations rather than one today. We didn't really meditate today, you did the exercise. So it would be nice to have meditated more properly. But so there's a handout, a blue piece of paper that goes over some of this. I think it's over there by the entryway somewhere. And I thank you. And if you have any questions for me, you can come up here in the front and I'm happy to answer. Thank you.